This segment is about things that took a long time to happen and are finally here, and one brand new community formation. Project Valhalla is the standout story. It's been in development for over a decade inside the OpenJDK project, and JDK 28 is finally delivering the core features. The JVM Weekly Explainer is getting 182 points and 81 comments, which reflects the Java community's genuine excitement.
For context, Project Valhalla was initiated around 2014 by Brian Goetz and the OpenJDK team with a goal that sounds simple but is deceptively complex, bringing value types to the JVM. The Java Virtual Machine was designed around the assumption that objects are references, meaning when you work with a Java object, you're working with a pointer to memory on the heap, not the data itself. This was a clean design decision in 1995, but has a performance cost in 2026, especially for numerical computation and data-intensive applications.
Value types, also called value classes in the final spec, let you define types where the runtime works with the actual data inline rather than through a reference. The implications cascade through the type system. You can have arrays of value objects that are laid out contiguously in memory, which is critical for cache performance. And you eliminate a class of null pointer exceptions because value objects don't have identity. The JVM Weekly post does a good job of explaining why each of these matters, and the HN comments from JVM engineers are validating the analysis.
The decade timeline is worth dwelling on because it reflects something real about the cost of evolving a platform that runs production workloads for a huge fraction of the world's enterprise software. The JVM compatibility guarantee is extremely strong. If your Java 8 code still runs on JDK 21, that's by design. Adding value types without breaking that compatibility required solving problems that didn't have off-the-shelf solutions. The team published a series of State of Valhalla documents over the years that are essentially public research journals on the problem.
Several HN commenters are comparing the Java approach to Kotlin's value classes and to Swift's value semantics. And the consensus seems to be that while other languages arrived at value semantics faster by not having the legacy constraint, the JVM approach will have broader impact because of the installed base. The number of production systems running Java code is enormous, and performance improvements at the VM level flow to all of them without requiring code changes.
MIT's custom operating system story is different but thematically related. It's about building something from scratch to understand something deeply. The MIT researchers built their own OS, not to deploy it, but to study how modern chips actually behave, specifically around cache hierarchies, memory access patterns, and the interaction between hardware and software in ways that existing operating systems obscure. The score is 2 on 5 with 28 comments.
What's interesting here is the methodology. Modern operating systems are so large and complex that isolating the behavior of specific hardware features is very difficult. There's too much software between the experiment and the chip. By building a minimal OS themselves, the researchers could instrument exactly the behaviors they wanted to observe. It's essentially building a microscope to study a specimen rather than looking through glass that was built for a different purpose.
This approach has deep roots in computer science. The exokernel project at MIT in the 1990s was similar in spirit, asking what happens if you strip the OS to almost nothing and let applications control their own resource management. The current work seems oriented more toward understanding hardware than rethinking software architecture, but the spirit of build it yourself to understand it is the same. And honestly, as chip architectures get more heterogeneous, CPUs, GPUs, NPUs, and now specialized AI accelerators all on the same SoC, the question of how an OS should manage these becomes urgent again.
Cornell's CS6120 course on advanced compilers has been on Hacker News before, but it's resurging with a score of 381 and 52 comments. This is Adrian Sampson's course, and it's remarkable because it's a graduate-level compilers course made freely available as a self-guided online course with actual assignments, readings, and a structured curriculum. The HN comments from people who've worked through it are enthusiastic.
Compilers are one of those areas where the practical relevance is easy to understate. Every piece of software runs through a compiler or interpreter. Understanding how compilers work, how they transform source code to optimized machine instructions, how they reason about data flow, how they handle correctness and performance trade-offs, gives you intuitions about software performance that are otherwise invisible. This course, getting renewed attention, suggests demand for that knowledge is growing as people build systems that need to squeeze out real performance.
The Raku Foundation is a quieter story with a score of 43, but it matters for the programming language ecosystem. Raku was formerly Perl 6, a redesign of Perl that took 20 years to complete and launched as Raku in 2019 after separating from the Perl name. The formation of a dedicated foundation provides governance, legal structure, and a permanent home for the language's development, independent of any individual's involvement.
Programming language foundations are how open source languages achieve longevity. The Python Software Foundation, the Rust Foundation, the Apache Software Foundation. These structures ensure that when key contributors move on or circumstances change, the project has institutional continuity. Raku is a genuinely interesting language with some ahead-of-its-time features around gradual typing and concurrency, and a stable foundation gives it the infrastructure to attract sustained contribution.
There's also the .gitignore story, which got 436 points and 134 comments, one of the higher scores today. The post explains that Git has multiple mechanisms for ignoring files beyond the familiar .gitignore, specifically a per-repository.git or info or exclude file and a global gitignore path you can configure, plus the assume unchanged and skip worktree flags for already tracked files. This is one of those posts that resonates enormously on HN because it tells experienced developers something they should have known, but didn't.
The reason this matters practically is that .gitignore is version controlled, meaning it gets pushed to the repository. If you have machine-specific ignore rules, like ignoring a specific IDE configuration that only your setup uses, you don't want to pollute the shared .gitignore with it. The git or info or exclude file gives you a personal ignore list that never leaves your machine. That's a workflow quality of life improvement that many developers will immediately find relevant.